The Athletic. After months of hard winter work and three tests, four if you count Valencia last November, the 2024 MotoGP pre-season is done, and it's ended with Pecco Bagnaia looking extremely fast on the latest works Ducati, and Honda and Yamaha still a long way off the pace. But there's also plenty going on that suggests 2024 won't just be 2023 repeated. I'm Matt Beard, this is the Race MotoGP podcast, and joining me to dissect the final 2 days of testing in Qatar are Simon Paterson, who's out there in LaSalle, and Valentin Hurunci. Now, right, a warning to us three before we get into this. We've got three more weeks before the season opening Qatar Grand Prix. We have a few podcasts planned in that time, and we've already been in listeners' ears once already this week with the excellent Marc Márquez interview with Simon. So we're going to try to hold ourselves back from turning this episode into a full-on season preview covering every topic in our heads, and instead we're just going to focus on the standout elements of the final test. So let's keep that in mind. If accidentally we're still here in an hour and a half's time banging on about the 2025 rider market of Ferman Aldegar, then we've lapsed. But let's do our best to just think Qatar last 2 days. Simon?
It's 1 a.m. post-testing in Qatar. I don't think we'll be talking for an hour and a half tonight.
No, fair enough. And for Val and I, there's a small matter of the 3 days of F1 testing starting early tomorrow morning as we record this, as we have to cover that as well. So let's crack straight on with the outcome of the final test. And someone to avoid talk about the rider market as well, someone who is surely not on the move in the rider market, and that is Pecco Bagnaia. Very, very fast in winter testing, ending on an absolute high in Qatar. When you look at the pace he's been running and you listen to the mood he seems to be in at the end of this test, it feels like he's really well set up for a hat trick. But this is surely too early to be saying that, isn't it?
It's quite funny you mentioned the kind of rider market, because we were talking to Luca Marini tonight in his media debrief. He's obviously quite good friends with Pecco Bagnaia, and someone said, you know, is Luca the guy to beat? Or is Pecco the guy to beat? Sorry. And Luca was like, no, he's not the guy to beat. He's just jacking up his price before he signs his new Ducati contract. He's just putting an extra zero in the end of it at the minute. But his lap time tonight was astonishing. You know, someone asked me afterwards what the biggest surprise of the test was, and you would have pushed me hard before this test to say that the biggest surprise would have been Pecco, because I expected him to be super, super fast, but he was next level tonight. You know, we were talking about how Marco Bezzecchi had done the first 151 lap of the LaSalle circuit, and within like 30 seconds of it, Bagnaia had done the first 150 lap. Yeah. It was just mind-blowing how much he moved things along tonight. Obviously, a few others got close to him, but honestly, in terms of pace, in terms of single lap, in terms of confidence, he looks like, you know, head and shoulders the championship favourite right now. And he even admitted as much himself, which is not normally a Pecco trait. He tends to be quite calm, doesn't get too excited, doesn't blow his own trumpet too much, but you know, he admitted tonight that he's never had a preseason like this, basically in Grand Prix racing. This is far superior to what last year's preseason was like, and we know how that ended. It just looks like everything's working fantastically for him right now. He's just on that crest of a wave at the perfect time as we go into an opening race of a year where you expect him to win in Qatar and expect him to go on to win the championship again.
It was 3/10 clear in Portimao last year in the final test, I believe. He is only 1/10 clear today. But I think, as Simon says, I think people do need to delve into the pace and see what's going on there. And I've not really had the opportunity. And I don't think much of the MotoGP grid has had either, because it's been a very busy 2 days with, you know, track conditions limited as to when they're at their best. Obviously, both days in Qatar, the first couple of hours are just, you know, in the trash, straight they go. Nobody wants to ride in those conditions. But it's not the peak lap time, as impressive as that was, because clearly track conditions were amazing. There were huge lap times being found relative to the November race, even by the same bikes. So clearly, a lot of this lap record demolition is track conditions, but It's the fact that every time it looked like Pecco Bagnaia went on a little run, he was stopped by a lot. Every time they felt like putting down some sort of marker or really pushing things. He was so easily into first place. And he's not really, you know, he did top the BMW M Award Pole Championship last year, so he was MotoGP's best qualifier last year. But I think in the latter half of the season, you could legitimately point to the single lap aspect as, if not a weakness, then a relative weakness, especially in the battle against Jorge Martin. And I'm not used to this version of Bagnaia necessarily, that, you know, doesn't necessarily build gradually so much as just unleashes the pace on tap whenever he wants. It's been very impressive. It does feel a lot like 2023, less than 2023 in certain regards, but also more than 2023 in terms of the preparedness of Pecco himself.
The other thing that's really stood out to me, and this is obviously sort of slightly anecdotal and everything, but the last two nights, both nights of the test, at some point I've went out on track for a wander down the service road, myself and Maddie, my wife. We've sort of been walking around the track, and both nights at some point Pecco's came past, spotted us, and been like giving us daft waves and like hanging off the side of the bike. He looks so relaxed. He just looks like someone that's like cruising around having fun. He's not under the pressure of someone that's trying to defend a championship. We spoke to Enea Bastianini, who was the only person really to run him close in the end, his teammate. And Enea straight up said, you know, I'm not pushing to the limit, and I'm almost certain Pecco's not either. You know, it's straight up said that there is more to come from this package, from this bike, whenever it comes down to qualifying in 2 weeks' time or 15 days' time or whatever at LaSalle. So, you know, the lap record out here was a 151.8. Pecco did a 159 and was comfortable cruising doing it. You know, we're going to end up like a second under the lap record, more than that, whenever it comes to actually down to the wire. And it's just, you look at everyone else in the grid, especially those who aren't in a Ducati, and they're just completely demoralized by the fact that they've all made improvements to their bikes this year in some way or another, and Ducati have somehow found an extra second. You know, the gap, everyone has made their bikes better, and Ducati have pulled a gap away from them rather than the others have got closer.
And unusually compared to recent winters, it's the brand new Ducati, it's the 2024, that is making that running. The advantage of the well-sorted bike isn't showing through. So what are the riders reporting that's better about the 2024 Desmos Sedici compared to last year's?
I mean, everything, in a word. Yeah, that's the word that's been used over and over again, I think, by Bagnaia. Also by Bastianini, which makes more sense because obviously Nea Bastianini never got on with the 2023 Ducati. But the fact that it's being used by Pecco Bagnaia already, while pointing to the previous bike that took him to the championship, I think is quite alarming. I think most of it will be, I want to say most of it will be stopping, is sort of the feeling I've picked up on. But it's a very much like a rounded sort of thing. In terms of the stopping, they're working out a bit in terms of the first application of the throttle, so, you know, how it punches out of the corner. But that's, you know, it should feel churlish for them to complain about anything, much less acceleration or anything in that regard. But, you know, they're not really complaining. They love the bike. It just seems an upgrade everywhere, basically.
I think the only component that has been substantial in terms of sort of incremental improvements everywhere is they bought a new engine in Valencia for the first day of testing that was a fair bit better. You know, it was faster, it was smoother, but they kind of bolted it in for that single day of Valencia testing and it just worked, and they've not really touched it since. So it's kind of, they've stopped talking about it now because it worked from day one. And that in itself is quite ominous. Whenever you go back to like the trials and tribulations of 2022, whenever they ended up starting the season on two different specs of engine because they couldn't agree on what was going to work, and it's a long way away from that this year. It's just daunting how much better they've made this bike without actually seeming to have found any negatives. You know, that they've not spent time working on any component to integrate it into the package. And I think that's why Pecco in particular is cruising around so much at this test, because he's just working on race setup. There's nothing left to do with the bike.
One little snippet that we didn't flag up when you mentioned it, but it's very significant. Bastianini was Bagnaia's closest challenger. Bastianini sounds like a different rider compared to certainly this time last year, when his stock was basically falling already because it seemed like he was so ill at ease with the bike that was supposed to be his big chance. And things just got worse and worse as the season went on. He got more injured and lost his way when he did get back. So is this Bastianini progress real? And how good is his progress? Is he coming into this season close to Pecco's pace, or still a little way off?
I think we're seeing what we should have seen 12 months ago from Enea Bastianini. I think he's finally at that point now, after just a disastrous 12 months that he very quickly wants to forget about. But it's, you know, this is the potential of the Enea Bastianini that did all that winning on a satellite Gresini bike in 2022, and then never got to show it whenever he got his factory promotion. I don't know if it's going to be enough to fight against Bagnaia for the title. I don't think it is, because I think Bagnaia is a more complete package. I think he's a more rounded rider. So it'll be enough to secure absolutely his factory Ducati seat for another two seasons if he wants it, because he's going to win races and he's going to be there or thereabouts. If Pecco Bagnaia wasn't there and looking so sorted, it would be a very, very good year for Enea Bastianini. Just don't think he's got the last couple of percentage points.
So I thought the lap Enea did specifically, and obviously, again, track conditions, improvement, everybody's going under the lap record, etc., etc. And Enea Bastianini is not a bad qualifier necessarily, but he's just not an elite qualifier, I think. He is, by MotoGP terms, I would say below average relative to his output over race distance, or at least he wasn't his best season in 2022. But, you know, the fact that he's a 10th off Pecco Bagnaia and that far under the lap record in testing already in Qatar. Okay, he likes Qatar, but I don't think he likes it this much. I don't think it's a Marc Marquez Saxon Ring thing or whatever. He wasn't amazing in Qatar in the weekend last year, and that was later in the season. He was more fit, and he wasn't anything to write home about too much. He had a troubled weekend.
It was straight off a win as well. He should have been in Cloud 9, and it wasn't.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
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 Yeah. And he had a messy weekend, but it just also wasn't as fast as you'd expect if there was just some sort of mega affinity with the circuit. So I think this lap time is legit. I want to see, still, you know, what we're waiting for from Enea Bastianini on the red bike more than anything, because that's how, if he wants to win the championship, this is what should win it, is some more of that black magic from 2022 when it comes to the second half of the Sunday race. That's the business. Baby, that's what he needs, because that'll be his trump
card. It's not even the second half, is it? It's like the final quarter. Yes. Suddenly, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, and he's still going. His pace isn't dropping. He's exactly. Still coming through people when everyone else is starting to wilt.
It's basically what Johann Zarco was more doing last year than Enea Bastianini. And Zarco obviously is not in the Ducati camp anymore, but it's also not the sort of skill that, as we've said many, many times, this format isn't amazing for that skill, because obviously the Sunday race now weighs less and your grid position is set up earlier into the weekend. Now, with all that said, if he's qualifying well enough, it'll be fine. It'll be okay. And we just need to wait and see how the adaptability is, how quickly he gets the lap time he needs to be at during the weekends. That'll, for me, will be the biggest question. And whether that, again, that black magic in race trim is back. He sounds really happy. Everybody, and you know, Ducati speaking about his progress, sounds really happy, and he could be a very interesting factor in this year's fight. But it's, you know, there are question marks that there aren't for Bagnaia. You know, fair enough, because Pecco's our two-time champion.
How about the guy who made Pecco's life so difficult last year, Jorge Martin? I found him quite difficult to get a read on during this winter. It's been up and down. Initially he seemed unhappy with the new bike, then he seemed fine with it aero-wise. This was the issue for him, and then a little bit troubled last couple of days with a specific issue.
So it was rear chatter, which I think Enea Bastini has also reported, and I believe Alex Marquez also mentioned maybe on last year's bike. Yeah. But for Martin, it's been apparently the limiting factor and one that he has been battling through the 2 days of the Qatar test, but that really hindered him when it came to going all out for that, you know, lap record smashing attempt. Yeah, I think he is closer than he was on the timesheets. I think it is widely acknowledged that he's one of the big three, that there's no real, like, huge worrying deficit or anything like that. But it's just, you know, how, whether that problem is fixed in time or not and how he'll hold up over a race distance. My impression, and we'll go into this more in the season preview, I think he's fine. I don't think there's a huge concern there.
The only interesting thing really about the problem is that it seems to be something in corner entry that's affecting, to a lesser extent, Bastianini, but not bothering him. So it's like a riding style specific thing in that it's penalizing Martin more than it's penalizing any of the others. There is every possibility that Pecco Bagnaia has a little bit of the issue as well, and he just isn't saying anything because why would you? I think Alex Marquez's problem is different, maybe.
Probably.
It sounded a little bit like it was coming from something else, and the fact that he's in an older bike kind of makes me think that as well, but it doesn't sound like something kind of seriously debilitating for Martin. They're going to work through everything that, you know, they've got in terms of equipment and try and figure out what the problem is. He was a bit vague on whether it was happening on both bikes or not. He avoided the question whenever he was asked it, which makes me think that their suspicion right now is that it's swinging arm, or it's, you know, something's going to bent, or
yeah,
something like that. There's a manufacturing imperfection, something small like that, that they'll try and iron out by, you know, replacing parts. So it's not going to be something that's going to hold them back for too long, I think.
That's, you know, that's also the part that makes me think it's not that big a deal, because he has two bikes and he was asked, is it on both bikes? And his answer was, well, I only really use the one. So you use the chattering one, so I guess it's largely fine. Which, you know, I mean, obviously we're talking about tenths of a second and we're talking about a sprint race that's probably going to be nuts. So ideally you wouldn't have anything like that. But Jorge Martin sounds confident. Like, we went into it talking about this problem, but let's make it clear. It's slightly nitpicks at this point. He will be in the mix. Everybody expects him to be in the mix. He himself expects himself to be in the mix. Sounds fine. It sounds fine for all the three factory spec Ducatis that were present here, and the fourth one is still unfortunately walking off the Portimao road bike accident, and we'll have to learn it on the fly in the Qatar Grand Prix, which sounds not fun at all, not even a little bit fun. Does not sound good.
No, I think we will definitely get into Franco Morbidelli's situation in a bit more depth in one of the episodes before Qatar, because gosh, of all the riders who didn't need to lose the whole preseason, he was possibly top of the list. But I guess with Martin, second half of last season, I got so used to him just being, okay, things would go wrong in races, but in terms of raw pace, there was never a worry, never a problem. It was just relentlessly fastest on raw one lap speed and translating that in the sprints. So I think to hear him out of sorts at all the last couple of weeks has been like, oh, this, I've got out of the habit of him sounding, he normally sounds troubled at the end of a Sunday when something's gone dramatically wrong, possibly of his own doing, but not prior to that. We should also check in with a friend of the podcast, Mark Marquez, and how he got on over these couple of days. So we have said, like, 2024 Ducati is a step up, which maybe wasn't quite what we were expecting at this point, certainly not in terms of immediate performance. Mark looking very good among the riders on the 2023 Ducati, at least, but how would you guys assess where he is going into Qatar, Simon?
I think to pick a word to kind of round up his test and his mood after the test, I'd call it content. He wasn't setting the world. He set a very, very good lap time. He was very, very fast, don't get me wrong. But it almost felt incidental, like the lap time kind of happened as a result of the process he was working. And it was just, you know, the end result of a really good test where he wasn't trying to be really fast. He was just trying to be there. They obviously worked very well. He is easing into the Ducati transition. I think he's not really expecting to come to the race and set things on fire and be, you know, super fast and super impressive right away. But, you know, every time I hear him speaking and every time I hear him talking about this building and the progression and the learning, there's a little voice in the back of my head that just keeps saying, he's going to win a CODA. He's going to win a CODA. He's going to win a CODA. And I'm less sure than I have been that he's going to win the championship. I was never too sure that he was going to win in Qatar, but I'm certain he's going to win a CODA now. Like, there's no point in anyone else keeping going. He is going to win in Texas.
I think he set his target for Qatar. Well, he didn't say target. He said if they were racing tomorrow, it would be going for P5 or P6, which Mark has won championships finishing P4 in Qatar and finishing P5 in Qatar. Like, that does happen. And I think as much as the lap time was incidental, just, you know, seeing it pop up on the timing page and feeling that sort of, okay, he's cracked something single lap finally, like properly something. Because he was just 3/10 off or whatever, 3 or 4/10 off, quicker than the other GP23s. That's actually, I think that's really significant on a track he does not love. Pretty famously, pretty clearly. I think that's a considerable statement, although one he wasn't, you know, too interested in bigging up. Then immediately, of course, he went on the race run. He crashed for the first time in the Ducati. Right side crash, I think slow corner. He picked up the bike immediately, got back to the pits, was generally smiling in his description. It almost sounded like it was an incident where he didn't quite decide to crash, but decided to see, all right, does this crash? Is this a crash? So he went in a bit deep and instead of bailing out was like, all right, let's see what happens here. And apparently what happens is you hit the ground. But there's still room to improve pretty clearly. I think it's just, you know, improvements will now be harder to come by because you go into the hustle and bustle of the race weekends and, you know, FP2, Q0, that kind of stuff. I am also less confident that he will win the championship. I shouldn't say the word confident, but like I believe in it less, but not because of Mark himself so much as because of how good the 2024 Ducati looks. Like I should have just immediately believed Gigi Deligno when he said in Valencia last year that this is a bigger step than previous years. But I had to see it to believe it. I still have to see it to be sure of it. But in terms of like in the test, it looked a bigger step. It looked readier.
But that's the weird thing about this. You expect big steps to be less ready at this point in the season.
Yeah, true.
And that's the baffling thing. They've made a big step with a seamless transition, which I don't recall anyone really doing this seamlessly, this easily in a very long time.
One thing missing from our Marc Márquez interview episode earlier this week was him answering the questions that some of you sent in. The scheduling for the interview didn't quite permit getting the listener questions in too on that occasion, but Grassini and Marc Márquez promised straight away they would find time to answer a couple during the week. We narrowed it down to two to throw at Marc, and Simon did get that done during the test. So here is Marc Márquez answering a couple of questions from you out there, the Race MotoGP podcast listeners.
The first one is from Elisa, and she wants to know if you're, now that you've had a fully healthy off season, has it changed how you train all the injuries? Do you train the arm more? Do you train it less? And how does it compare to like training a few years ago?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I had much more time this winter, and I had time to relax, to have some vacations. That this is good also for your mental side, and then I had time to start step by step and to work in my weak points, especially on that right arm. We work a little bit more deeply on that, on small details. Why? Because we had more time. Yeah. And we prepared the body to push right now in February, March with the pre-season, not only at home, also with the MotoGP. And this helps a lot. And yeah, I did a step compared last year.
Cool. And then the other question is from Gareth. He wants to know, he says, it's clear that you've moved manufacturer to become more competitive, but he wants to know what the long-term goal is. Is it to get back to winning races? Is it to win 2 or 3 more titles down the line? What's the, you know, the long goal?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, of course I would like to say, no, my target is try to win. But we are not on the moment to say. I mean, why? Because we're coming for from 4 years in a row, super difficult with a lot of injuries. Yeah. So now I just try to rebuild the confidence in myself. Because if I have confidence, if I enjoy it, I will be more competitive. I don't know if enough or not. But if you are more competitive, if you are enjoying, then you can be longer in your career. And this is the main target, try to enjoy it. Win, honestly speaking, is not a real target. Because are a few guys, I mean, I'm human. And if I'm human, it means that I'm 31. I'm not very old, but the young guys are coming with another speed. And I need to learn how to do and how to learn from them. To be faster.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now, obviously, we had far more questions than that, but we had to be extremely selective on this occasion with the time Marc Márquez was able to give up. We will try to sneak in answers to a few more of what you sent us as the year goes on. Probably not in that one-on-one format, sadly, but Simon, we'll give you a mission to sneak a few into Marc's regular debriefs and keep us posted on what he comes up with. And again, a huge, huge thank you to everyone who sent in questions for Marc and to Marc and Grassini for making it all happen for us. We're really proud of the Márquez interview episode from earlier this week. So if you haven't listened to it yet, please do. Tell your friends too as well. Márquez was in an extremely open and laid back mood, and it is well worth your time. It's one we really enjoyed putting together. So Ducati's closest rival in the test was Aprilia, but again, a mixed bag for the various Aprilia riders. Should we start with the one who was looking, well, actually not just one, there were two looking particularly good. No, actually, let's say that again. There were three who were looking particularly good, but one keeps going fast in testing, so I'm not going to take it seriously yet. Let's talk about Raul Fernandez first, I think, because that was a very headline, attention-grabbing time for him to stick in. Who wants to go first on the how's Fernandez doing?
So my thing with Raul Fernandez, and this is not specifically about Raul Fernandez, but it's about other riders who talk about how, you know, you're behind the eight ball if you've missed some days. Do they say behind the eight ball? Is that a saying?
It is now.
Just make that up.
It's late.
It is.
We know what you mean.
No idea. Anyway.
Yeah, it'll do.
Yeah. Is Raul Fernandez missed an entire 3-day test in Sepang and is still immediately like uber fast here, like right away, on a bike that, okay, is more polished than most people's stuff, but a bike that he doesn't really know that well, is a really good test by Raul Fernandez. And especially that he's not even 100% fit yet, is he?
Nowhere
with
near
the
it.
Triple fracture in his yeah. pelvis and his hip.
Nasty little injury, wasn't it? For you know, one that's not ruled him out for a very long time. It's one you'd imagine he's going to be carrying a lot of pain from yeah. for quite a while.
Look, I also thought Raul Fernandez was really good in testing last season, and it didn't really translate into anything for most of the actual season. So I'm not willing to say too much, but these were a really, really impressive 2 days. It also sort of felt like he was fast on demand. Like whenever it came time to do a lap time, he was up there, and apparently he was riding a little bit conservative because he's already hurt and didn't want to get hurt more. So probably there was something else in the bag in the time attack. And the time attack was already really, really good. It's super interesting, man. And it's great for Trackhouse. And potentially Trackhouse demanded the 24 Aprilias or asked for them as soon as possible. But potentially it sort of stumbled into a very pleasant formula with a hand-me-down bike that seems to really work for one of its riders without teething problems and can maybe be crucial in unlocking the mythical version of Raul Fernandez that was once promised.
It's no surprise whatsoever that the first thing he said to me whenever we sat down before the test started on whatever day that was, I've lost track of time and space. The first thing...
Sunday.
Yeah, that sounds about right. The first thing he said to me was, I am so glad I didn't get the 2024 bike. And it's because, you know, he's already rode the 23 bike. He had a great feeling with it in Valencia. He didn't have a bad feeling with it in Sepang before he crashed on his third lap on it. So I think his confidence was still pretty high coming into this test on that bike. And he was able to pick up at least where he left off in Valencia, where he finished the test fastest. And it's been a pretty seamless transition to hear, even though he missed all that time in Malaysia. It's worked out really, really well for him. And as Val says, I think there is a possibility now that we are seeing the oft-promised, rarely-delivered Raul Fernandez of that amazing Moto2 season.
But the guy who did get the 2024 bike at Trackhouse, his teammate Miguel Oliveira, has not sounded happy at any point in this preseason so far.
He did at the very end of the test. And he almost sounded a bit sheepish about something that they'd done on the bike, very basic and very simple, that they should have done at the start of the test, and that explained why he spent basically a day and a half out of the 2 days really, really struggling and looking really average on the 24 bike. But they got it working. They didn't just quite have enough time to get it working properly enough to set a time attack or to show much in the way of promise on the timesheets. But he actually, in the end, was quite upbeat, quite chipper.
And the factory Aprilia, so Aprilia actually had, was it three bikes in the top six at the end of Tuesday? Third, fifth and sixth, with Aleix Espargaró third. Maverick Viñales sixth behind Fernandez. Let's not talk about Viñales till he's done something on the Sunday. That's my rule for now. So the rule stands. We talk about Viñales at the end of a Sunday when he's done something that actually sticks. But Espargaró has had a strong winter, hasn't he, for a guy who may or may not be retiring, probably not at this rate at the end of this season. He's looking at the person most likely to upset Ducati, I'd say, unless KTM has got a lot of pace.
I think there's a lot of it. It looks really good right now because they're so strong at LaSalle. I think that's masking it a bit. He's good. He's fast. He's very, very fast. But he's not GP24 fast. He's not upset them for the title fast.
Yeah, no, I agree.
There's every possibility that we'll return to LaSalle in a few weeks' time. He'll win the race and then immediately sign a two-year contract extension, like on the podium. That wouldn't surprise me. But I don't think that there's enough there to basically do any better than we saw from him in the year before last with his kind of almost their title challenge. I think that's the peak of the combination of him and this bike against these guys.
But that, yeah, to me, I'm not thinking anyone other than someone either on a 2024 Ducati or Marc Marquez is winning this championship. But just being the person who stops the Ducati 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 occasionally is kind of what I'm aiming for the other guys at the moment. And his single lap pace but you know, he's a confidence rider as well, isn't he? He gets into this zone that's like half a second a lap quicker when he's in this buoyant mood and he thinks he can do everything with the bike. And from listening to the files you sent over, it sounds like he's in that kind of zone. Yeah. At least going into the season opening few races with this bike.
I mean, you said, everything I said after Sepang still applies in terms of my appreciation for how Aleix is doing, how he's done in this preseason, and how, honestly, I do think he continues to get better, like he says himself, and continues to just refuse to give up the lead role at Aprilia that I have forecast every season that finally this will be the tipping point, somebody else will take the reins. It's just not happening, so I'll stop doing it until it happens. I think you are probably right in the sense that there surely will be tracks where the Aprilia is just mega and the best bike and wins by a lot, like Barcelona last year. I think there'll be less grippy tracks than Qatar, but there will be there. But in terms of the biggest, more consistent thorn, I still think it'll be KTM and Brad Binder. Going by this test, it just felt like Binder specifically, I don't want to say hasn't really bothered, but hasn't really put his cards on the table just yet in terms of everything he can do. He's my one guy really to watch in Qatar. I'm really curious what happens there. Sounds like his time attack didn't exactly happen to plan. And the way he described his preseason is, and I want to quote this verbatim, "Well, last year I wanted to shoot myself, so I'd say this one is a bit better." Now remember, KTM was actually pretty good out of the blocks last year once out of the preseason looked a bit shaky, but then they dug in between the Portimao test and the Portimao race, and it looked rosy from there. And remember that KTM, even though we do sometimes talk about its lack of affinity for Qatar, Binder also did finish second there not too long ago. There's possibility for something really interesting on his side, I think. So I am still of the suspicion that they are slightly closer than Aprilia on average across the variety of tracks. I'm not sure it matters, but that's, you know, that's my two cents on it.
The one thing I think that Aprilia have over KTM is maybe a bit of depth in field that I don't think is there at KTM at the minute. I don't think Jack Miller is going to be the second fiddle to Brad Binder the way that Maverick Vinales could be to Aleix, the way that Raul Fernandez could be to Aleix. I think that we're going to see Binder doing things that make all the other KTMs look quite average, whereas there could actually be three Aprilias in the top 10 at the end of the race.
I mean, there were two KTMs leading the Valencia race last season. I'm not going to mention what happened after that. Let's omit that part.
And where did they finish?
Well, I don't remember right now. I have to go check.
Yeah.
I mentioned at the outset that Honda and Yamaha on paper are looking pretty similar coming into 2024 to how they finished 2023. Now, we didn't expect an overnight miracle for either of those manufacturers, given the positions they've been in. Even considering that, is how they looked in the Qatar test disappointing / worrying, or just what we would expect at this point? Honda was a little bit skewed, so we'll talk about Honda in a second, but Yamaha, every time a qualifying simulation seemed to be on the cards, you guys were kind of just shaking your heads at the lap times that were coming up. Is Yamaha still in that same predicament where it just has no one lap pace?
Well, this is why I wasn't impressed after Sepang. This is kind of what I thought I saw and what seems to still be the case. And they don't sound too shocked about it. The important thing for them is that Fabio Quartararo doesn't sound too shocked about him. I don't understand why, because to me it feels like another half a season for him is about to be wasted, thrown in the trash. But again, this is really... And it's not... I'm not bashing Yamaha by saying this, because they're clearly working and there's a hole to dig themselves out of, and they're doing it. They're making all the right hires. They've finally found a ton of top speed and everybody's trying really hard, and they've got a great rider lineup that they've done great to secure for as long as they have. And Alex Rins looks good. Shock, surprise, good rider. Alex Rins is good, but the qualifying pace is no bueno. They've clearly tried really hard on that final day to put a lap time on the board, and they're a second off. And a second might as well be 10 years. Might as well be 30 years. It's after 2 days of full testing at a super grippy track. I don't know. I think Qatar might really sting in 3 weeks' time. I think... What if they're out in Q1 together? They might not be, but... They, you know, Fabio Quartararo wants to be on row two. I don't see how they get on row two on the form of this test. Again, I don't want to be too... I'm just tired. I'm tired. I'm being mean. Everybody's working really hard.
No, you're tired, and you've spent the last couple of years, last year particularly, listening to Fabio Quartararo debriefs in which he complains like hell about the bike, and you're aware of his contract situation and how many other people we want to sign Fabio Quartararo. So it's not that you're being mean to Yamaha. You're pointing out the thing that is going to, you would expect to be weighing so heavily on Quartararo's mind. So if he's sounding positive about the potential and having faith in Yamaha, then that actually is absolutely great for Yamaha, because all the evidence on the timing screens is that he's in the same pit that made him furious for all of 2023.
There's a lot of differences in Honda and Yamaha at the minute that I see from this test. Where, you know, and you could say that the situation between the two looks quite similar, but it's really, really not. Because Honda have now, you know, like we expected, losing Marc Marquez has taken all of the pressure off them. Because the guys that they have that are there, Zarco and Marini, but also Mir, are there to make this bike fixed, you know, to fix this bike, to make it faster without the pressure of immediate results. Whereas Yamaha... are, you know, they still have their Marc Marquez. They still have an angry Fabio Quartararo shouting and screaming to everyone that'll listen about what they need to do to fix it. But they also seem to be further along in the process of fixing it, in that, you know, you basically, you say to Quartararo at the minute, you know, you ask him about, you know, there's still problems with the rear grip, and he says, yeah, but Max Bartolini's going to fix it. You know, oh, the aerodynamics is still need a bit of work. Yeah, but Max Bartolini is going to fix it. He has put all of his chips onto Max Bartolini delivering and being able to turn this project around. And to be fair to him, while he's complaining a lot about, you know, all the things that Yamaha riders complain about, he is caveating it all now by saying that he's aware that this new engineering team have only been there 6 weeks, and that this isn't actually their bike. And, you know, there's got to be someone within Yamaha pointing out to him now that he's been complaining about the bike being slow, and they hired Luca Marmarini, former Toyota and Ferrari F1 engine developer, to come into the project. And this is the first engine, really, that he's delivered to them. And it's suddenly a lot faster. And now they're saying, look, we've hired someone to build all the rest of the bike. It's going to need a bit of time. But guess what? We've now got concessions, so we can actually do that mid-season instead of having to wait until the end of the year to build you a brand new bike that you're not allowed to try until then. There is a lot to be positive about. And I think Lynn Jarvis and Mauro Maragalli are going to have to spend the next sort of 3 months telling Fabio Quartararo, don't make a decision until we've delivered what we've got coming.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I actually, again, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I'm going insane sometimes, but I do suddenly feel more the prospect of Fabio Quartararo staying with Yamaha just from listening to him talk about Bartolini and listening to how... you know, the subtle change in the annoyance is a different kind of, it's not really annoyance genuinely at this point. He has the right to be a lot more cranky than he has been, and usually Fabio Quartararo is the kind of guy who will use that right if he wants to, and he hasn't really. Now, he's not really committing verbally, he's still saying, you know, show me the money, basically. Not the money, but the pace, but also probably the money. But the pace is what he's saying publicly. But less open about flirtations with other prospective MotoGP projects that may or may not exist. And, you know, that's fair enough. The same, there's part of me that's really annoyed because I either want Fabio Quartararo on a really, really good bike, or Fabio Quartararo and Alex Rins on like a 2019 Yamaha that is not the actual 2019 Yamaha, but this year's version of the 2019 Yamaha, you know, whatever. Something great, because I think that would be awesome. But I don't think we're getting that this season just yet, unfortunately.
So, well, at Yamaha, we've got Quartararo sounding not furious. At Honda this week, it just sounds like everyone sounds ill.
Yeah.
And that's kind of masked. We can't really judge what Honda really got done or didn't get done at this test. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think Joan Mir had more to bring on the final day of testing and then spent most of the day vomiting in the corner of the garage with some mystery ailment that he's picked up. I think that, yeah, he was disappointed that he didn't get to show what was there to show. I think Luca Marini isn't really there yet to push for one lap. Johan Zarco seems quite confident that he can actually deliver a fairly good job come the race in Qatar, and especially the sprint race. Like, he's fairly confident that it's not a million miles away for him. And you would think if Zarco can deliver it at this point in his Honda career, then Mir can as well. A fully fit Mir can at least be, you know, scrapping for a top 10, which would be not so bad. It would be, I mean, let's be honest, let's look at Mir's record for last year. Any race where he's scoring points this season is going to be pretty positive. I think that, yeah, the illness thing in particular maybe masked what was there in terms of potential on the final day of testing.
Yeah, but the problem for them is, you know, it's the they lost out on the single lap time that probably will have been clear of Yamaha.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously... Mir crashed during a time attack, but was also just puking all over the place and wasn't really in a shape to do anything proper. Zarco crashed on a lap that was looking interesting, but only started, but was looking quite fascinating. I think that would have taken at least one of them in normal conditions clear of the Yamaha, so I would not be surprised if they out-qualify the M1s come 3 weeks' time. But it's just the question of whether they immediately go backwards in the race, which is, I think, the expectation.
And to be fair, being clear of the Yamahas wouldn't have left them a million miles away from director Q2 territory. It's not that bad. Yeah. Mir straight up said that the reason he crashed was because of his illness. I mean, he was pretty blunt about he fell off because he wasn't feeling very well, because he was weak and he was, yeah. So, yeah, there's more there than we saw from them.
Also, when you talk about Honda getting clear of Yamaha, like you said, well, there's a 30-year time gap between pole and Yamaha. So there's a little bit of space to slot into if you're not sliding off on your own vomit or whatever unfolded there. Let's end on that image that I've just put in everyone's heads. Thank you, Val. Thank you, Simon. Simon, get to bed. It's nearly 2 a.m. in Qatar now. And then have a nice few days in Qatar. I hear you're hanging around for a little while. We'll talk about that next week, maybe. But yeah.
We will, yes.
There might be something else he gets to do while he's in Qatar.
Might be something going on. Might be something going
interesting.
On.
Interesting. Val, you get some sleep before F1 testing starts. Listeners, have a little bit of a break from MotoGP actual new action, because after what seemed like a fairly flat out few weeks of launches and testing, apart from Pramac launching an F1 race or something like that, as far as I can tell, it's going to be a bit of a quieter spell for actual MotoGP events until it really kicks off properly with the Qatar Grand Prix. But we'll be back in your ears regularly in that time, previewing the season, finding stuff to argue about, and maybe bring you one or two little special things along the way. We'll be back next week on the Race MotoGP podcast. If you're into F1, we'll have a podcast every day from testing as well, so keep an ear out for that. And let's see if that is as... if it follows the same script as MotoGP and it all looks a little bit like 2023.
The Athletic.